1, 2, 3.
Welcome to the Smartest Amazon Seller Podcast. We're going to make you guys smarter today. I know that. And it's 2024. I've been selling for over a decade, and the ups and downs of what's happened to Amazon sellers is very interesting. And today, I think it's going to kind of be a great story about the evolutions, the changes of how the average person or the aggressive entrepreneur, how they can make money embracing the marketplace, the platform. I have with me someone who's been around for quite some time and has seen more than his share of stories. And we're going to share something like really interesting that I think, you know, he shifted his business models. I have with me the founder of My Amazon Guy, Stephen Pope. This is his third time on the podcast. It's always easy to talk with him because he's in the trenches. He actually has his own seller account, and something happened to a seller account that actually shifted his entire business model. And it's going to be very interesting. Well, Stephen, welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having me on, Scott. It's always a pleasure.
All right. Congrats on 6 years of your agency. So you just posted that.
I still have my original client that signed on April 2nd, 2018. So it's fun to see things grow.
Well, that's fun. And if people aren't familiar with Stephen Pope, he's probably, I actually can say this with authority, as an agency owner, is the most prolific YouTuber that educates, talks about all the nitty gritty details on dealing with the Amazon marketplace. It's all on YouTube. And so if you actually have a question about something very technical, chances are you can just type in that question, Stephen Pope on YouTube, and one of his videos are going to pop up.
Probably. Every day I wake up and Amazon does something else to my account, I just get pissed off and I'm like, I can't believe you. Why, I sell tweezers. Why are you putting pesticides tests on my account? Like, what the frick? You know, and I shoot videos that obviously the passion seeps through the microphone here. But that's been what it's like. I mean, you got to have like tenacity and grit in the blood and veins of being a seller on Amazon these days.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. And 2024, the stress is there as like people are grappling with the new fees. And the story's not done with those new fees.
Your April Fool's joke got a lot of people, including me, you know, FTC coming in.
Yeah, that was. I was surprised there and other places. Like, I think some people, even after the fact, still didn't get that it was an April Fool's. I made a post.
That's because people were really hoping it was true. That's why.
Yeah. I made a post that Lina Khan of the FTC orders Amazon to reverse course on their fees.
It's just enough believable too.
Yeah. I mean, the truth is it would happen in probably a different way. It wouldn't happen like so forcefully. It would be like, here's what I would see. They would announce that they're including it in their current lawsuit. They'd be like, hey, we're adding this.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that lawsuit's a farce and nothing's going to come of it of any value to us.
No, I don't think so either. Totally agree. I'm like, this is not going to have the teeth.
They'll parade them around. They'll have their, like, just like they had their pound of flesh from Mark Zuckerberg coming in from Facebook and whatever. They'll do the same thing with whoever's coming from Amazon. Maybe they'll pull Bezos in just for the photo op. Who knows? But at the end of the day, nothing's going to happen.
Right. No, nothing meaningful that like the average seller would be like, okay, yeah. But who knows? Some stuff has happened in the EU, even around like some of the buy box suppression and stuff like that. So I don't know. The truth is I'm not an expert. I can't quite go into it, but definitely have passion about those subjects. Okay. Well, when you started your agency, did you start your seller account afterwards or before?
Before. So I had a brand called Fine Occasion that sold wine and beer glasses with like letters on them. And I did that for a couple of years with a partner. We split ways. I sold my half to him and I started another account, made a brand called Mobster. Very similar-esque wine glasses with funny sayings. The best year I ever had on Amazon, I made a net profit of $250,000. And this was probably the second year of my agency. And I did that on the side and it got worse after that. Like it just went slowly downhill after that year and every year got harder. So I tried to reinvent myself. I made another brand called Age of Sage. My daughter's 4. Her name is Sage. I was like, oh, I'm going to make this brand. I use, for those that see the video here, I have her face plastered on the carton of the soap. And I went to town and made a soap brand. And, you know, it was like the female version of Dr. Squatch in a way, right? And we sold thousands and thousands of units. So that was kind of my journey. I launched another brand with holsters called Holstit. totally flopped. Who would have known that Americans don't care about American-made holsters? You know, I thought it would be a thing, but it wasn't. So the Chinese crushed me on that and never got off the ground. And so we invented a new way to manufacture holsters in the Carolinas, and like four times faster, super cool tech, totally bombed on the sales. So as a marketer, I've tested all kinds of categories with my own dollars. I've spent $500K in PPC on my own account. And then the agency, I manage 400 accounts and generate about $800 million in annual gross. So I've seen a lot. On a daily basis, I see what most people would see on their account over the course of a year. I see like multiple times a day on my own account, on the accounts that manage at the agency.
Yeah. With that 400 accounts, you got to imagine that there's probably 3 to 5 on any given day in seller performance jail.
Yes. And it's, those are the brutal cases. And like most of the people we work with are good actors. They just get caught up in the robots. Amazon's shoot first, ask questions after the fact. That policy sucks for white hat sellers. It really does suck.
Do you think it's changed a little bit? Because I know for me, we got suspended in, you know, 2017. Didn't get suspended until 2020 again. It was something COVID related. And then after 2020, we would get a call from Amazon. They'd be like, hey, you know, you got to do this in the next 48 hours, 72 hours. They want to suspend you, but like you got a window to like respond. Do you feel like Amazon is giving a bit of space for that?
So I think that they're no longer suspending accounts like they used to, but instead they're suspending privileges like brand registry. And I lost my brand registry in the fall of 2023, and I couldn't figure out why. And then all of a sudden, a lot of the people that I filed trademarks for also started losing their brand registry. And at the time, I was like, is it me? Did they blacklist my lawyer? I had no idea. I was like scrambling, trying to guess at everything. But it turns out it had nothing to do with the lawyer. It had everything to do with the fact that Amazon was reviewing each and every single brand on the platform one at a time and basically outlining whether they felt like it was a real brand or not. And so the day and age of throw up a trademark on the USPTO and go file for brand registry is totally over. But over the last 4 years, you could file a trademark, get brand registered in under 7 days through the USPTO. You can still do that today. The difference is the Tumblr business that I've been selling was parody. And today, if you go on Amazon, try and find parody cups, they no longer exist. The entire category got nuked on Black Friday. And I lost $250,000 over this mistake. I don't even know if I'd call it a mistake so much as a positioning problem. But I lost my brand registry. I file appeal after appeal. It wouldn't work with me. And then I finally get the meeting and I get it back. And what I learned on that first call didn't click for me until they removed my brand registry a second time, right? So I was still under the impression, oh, it was a blacklisted lawyer. I removed the lawyer. I refiled the appeal and I'm good to go. Well, these tumblers that I sell, like this is the way that I'm holding up right here. They had a problem with it. They just didn't tell me, right? So when you ask, has Amazon's changed its ways? I would say, no, they haven't. They're still vague. They don't actually tell you what you did. They expect you to get on the stand and you're guilty until proven otherwise. Well, the problem is they don't tell you what you're guilty of and the judge is going to throw you in jail unless you admit to something and fix it. So I guessed wrong. But on the first call, they kind of suggested that the boxes didn't have permanently affixed branding on them, right? And it was just like a side note. Even though my soaps did, right? So I get out of jail, I get my brand registry back, everything was smooth. And then Black Friday rolled around and I wake up and all of my entire brand had been removed again. But this time they yanked all the listing.
Which is a very different thing. And that was probably more the positioning problem. They got rid of all the other parody.
But Black Friday, they removed every single product, soaps included, everything. And then over the next 48 hours, we're filing appeals, we're doing template file uploads, just trying to recover my Black Friday weekend, right? We got some of them back up, but the only thing we didn't get back up was the parody tumblers. And the challenge is that category is toast. And so because I was doing parody, right? And like a t-shirt company brand name, I don't even remember, would have really fun mock-ups or team-ups where they take like Pikachu and put it with Darth Vader on a t-shirt and put it in a Pokeball. And I've always been in love with that stuff. So this is a genre I just really like. And I made the mistake of being a seller in the category that I like. And I love gift giving. Well, anyway, long story short, even though I have 1,000 score on my account health, even though I've never received an IP infringement from any of the parody companies that I was approaching on, Amazon took it upon themselves to nuke the whole category, including my products, and no pathway to reinstatement. So to this day, 6-8 months later, I still don't have brand registry on that account. So I made a very difficult decision where every morning I was getting up and I was getting more depressed about it. Every day I was getting up and it was aggravating me and it was just affecting my mood and my health. I made the decision to sell the brand. And keep in mind, I'm a build to hold it kind of guy. And my daughter, I was like going to give this brand to her someday when she turned of age. So it was very emotionally invested. All right. That was my why. And I had to come to terms with the fact that my kids are going to be trust fund kids anyway. I'm a wealthy individual. I've made money on my agency. I didn't have to do that every day. So I didn't want to put up with it anymore. So we went, kind of did like a modest go to market. We found a buyer. And then at the last second, my partner decided to take it on without me. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to give you the same deal that we were going to get from this one guy and I'll buy it out of under you. And I said, deal. So my partner took it on. He's signaled that he may give it to my daughter someday still. That's like we've mostly both invested into this thing, right? He's like, I can't let you let this go, Steven, you know, just really wanted to make it work. So, but even to this day, the brand registry is still not reinstated. And I flat out told him, I was like, I don't actually think it's ever going to happen. And even though we're no longer selling the tumblers, we're all in on soaps and sage sticks and other things that are totally kosher. Amazon has blacklisted the account. Still 1,000 score on account health. No IP infringements, but no brand registry.
Twice a month, I probably hear stories similar to that. Just a huge challenge of selling on Amazon. And I think it would come, you know, these pills would be easier to swallow if the communication was just better, clear, more upfront, anything.
And Amazon, I understand why they do what they do. Their claim is by revealing information that it makes the black hats able to get around it. And I'm here to tell you, the black hat people are going to get around it regardless. It's the white hat people that get screwed when they don't have no idea what's going on. Nobody, like the unsophisticated seller just gets walked over, right? China wins at the end of the day in the current status quo.
Yeah. No, it's like, there's a degree that like, yeah, I don't know. Do you kill all the white hats to like shirk off a few black hats? Because it's tough. It's tough. Like, especially something like brand registry, it's not like you didn't go the right way and then they enforce it and it's somewhat arbitrary. Or like, I don't know, I think you're deserved more of a communication, no question. I actually think anyone would agree with that.
If they had told me the tumblers were the problem the first time, I would have just removed them and gone into soaps or, you know. But like, since I didn't know, now I got the double black mark and I'm like totally dead in the water.
Yep.
Is that fair? I don't know. Some would say, Steven, you should never have done parody. And to that, I'd say it's totally legal. It's ethical. It's also hilarious. But what do you think?
Like parody. I think there's actually wide open space there. I think it's creative. Well, you did react to this and actually did something. You started selling. I was very surprised when I think we were either texting or whatever that you said that you started doing some arbitrage.
Yeah. So during this process, I'm calling up my partner. My partner has been doing wholesale and retail arbitrage since the beginning of time, right? He's a multimillionaire, does it, and it's like passive for him at this point. And so during this brand registry process, I was like, you know, hey, Nick is his name. Nick, tell me, like, how much money are you making on this other side of Amazon? And he was telling me the numbers, and I was just like, this is so stupid. Why are we doing this? Like, why am I trying to build this brand? Why wouldn't I get in on that action? And so I said, I got $500,000. I'm going to give it to you. Can you start this new account up for me? And that's what we did. And then it went so well. We blew through the cash. We bought the product and immediately wanted to double down. So I put another $500,000 in. And so we're doing multi-million dollars in revenue already, right? Like we'll probably 12-month run rate, close to 20 mil is what I'm projecting in total sales. Right. And that's sizable right now. The profit margin on that is like 15%. Right. So you can run the math on that 3 mil net profit projected. My best year selling my own personal brand on Amazon was $250,000 in net profit. And blood, sweat, and tears. With the retail arbitrage, yes, you have to do a PO every week. You got to constantly be sourcing. But I no longer have to deal with the evils of dealing with seller support, brand registry. Maybe one day I'll have a yank that costs me $30,000 because I'm sitting on some inventory. I'm sure that'll happen someday. But in the grand scheme of things, it'll be small in comparison, right? Wholesale arrangements are getting built, all that good stuff too.
That's a pretty significant arbitrage. You know, that's the thing about reselling is scaling's not that hard. Getting from $1 to $10 million is a little bit of cash, a little bit of operations. How do you guys do your prep?
So the nice thing about this entire arrangement is my partner does 90% of the work, and I've become like this passive investor, and I just finance it. And which is perfect because where my zone of genius is in education, right? Which allows me to spend all my time in my agency. So yes, we do the prep work. There's a lot of reasons for that. Anytime you have the manufacturer, wholesaler, retailer, where, you know, distributor, wherever you're sourcing this ship direct, problems happen like every time. So we pull it all into a warehouse, and we've got various warehouses, but you know, primaries in Carolinas. And then we do the prep work there. You know, we have all the facilities, we got the racking, we got the machines, we got the trucks, pallet jacks, like full nine yards, all in house.
You said a mix of like retail arbitrage and wholesale. Retail arbitrage is harder to scale, especially like it involves like walking into a store. That gets tricky. What's your balance? Which one do you focus more on?
The big money maker is talking to distributors that have a bulk sale available, right? So this week we bought $30,000 in a toothpaste, right? And so in my mind, that arbitrage, that distribution play is pretty equivalent, but there's probably some nomenclature or the language that's used can be a little technical as we kind of dissect this. So obviously we're not walking in any physical stores. So if I incorrectly lump it into that, that's how new I am to this in the nomenclature. But what I will say is if you go back on my YouTube channel 5 years ago, I shat all over the strategy. And the reason for that is because I had pallets of candy delivered to my garage and I did it myself. I like packed it, picked it, shipped it myself. I had multiple wholesale deals and I knew the terrible warehousing friction, but I didn't have a real warehouse. I was doing it out of my garage, right? So like I knew how hard it was. I was making a good money, making a good killing, but it was hard work. It was harder than running an agency.
Yes. Let me throw one idea because it sounds like, you know, you've had a bit of a change of heart now that you've seen it. You're like, oh, I think sometimes people building brands, they actually kind of get it wrong when they look at resellers. And here's one sentence that like, to me, just like sums it all up. As long as reselling on Amazon is more profitable than driving Uber, people are going to keep coming. And it's like, if you're building a $100 million brand, you're going to look down on people that are like netting 125K a year. You're gonna be like, oh, what are you doing? Like, you're no entrepreneur. But the person that's making 125K a year could be like, this is life-changing. I used to make like $35,000 a year working in a warehouse or some other kind of hourly rate. Whereas there's a bit of an unlock in reselling because it does scale. Then you go like, you actually can like make your first hire, stuff like that. And so that's kind of how I think about it. It took me a second to realize like, wow, like, you know, people are going to just keep coming. And some people will leave the space. Maybe they graduate, try a different business model. Some actually did get into, I've probably met a dozen people that were real skilled wholesale that have moved into an agency play and they've become Amazon agencies. So that's fairly common.
The grass is always greener on the other side. Agencies want to become SaaS companies. Wholesalers want to become agencies. It full circle all the
time.
Yeah,
and no, and SaaS companies, there's different directions. That, like, actually, the truth is as I focus on my SaaS, I see people succeeding in my business model in a way that we didn't. And I am like super jealous. I'm like, this is a fun business.
It's fun to see the data and you got to figure out what your zone of genius is, right? So my zone of genius was not in making a brand, at least as it relates to selling on Amazon, right? Like I went through the motions, I made money, but the vehicle or the leverage for that zone of genius did not apply. My zone of genius was in education and in teaching. And my whole agency model has been built around that. Now, that is a larger vehicle for me. So there's going to be a lot of like people that pick up this podcast or leave a couple of comments and they'll be like, well, you know, why would anybody hire your agency if you can't even sell a brand on Amazon? And it's an interesting question. It's an interesting dialogue, right? There's a couple of points I'd make to that. First, I've always been an education zone of genius. My brand has always been about education, teaching, 2,000 videos on YouTube. You get it, right? Not being transparent about my current situation would be antithetical to my brand. It was eating me alive. I had to come out with it and talk about it.
And you probably had, I'm going to guess, Stephen, you had a few moments where like, you're like, oh, I don't want to share that. No. I just don't want to. Like, not right now. It's too fresh. But the moment you reframed it and shared it, like actually probably one of the better educational moments, you're like, oh, this is like real. This is something negative. I think I early on in the podcast shared when I got suspended, and for people to see like a $50 million Amazon account get suspended, like I got more attention, more like personal reach out from that than anything else.
And remarkably so, right? Higher engagement, more view counts, more people reaching out, and more net business, right? So the interesting part is that integrity, honesty, transparency, which are all on brand for an education brand, really do benefit from sharing the downs as much as sharing the ups. But the second point I'll make here is that people are better off hiring somebody who's made mistakes, because then they will prevent you from making those same mistakes. And that road rash has a lot of value. That's actually one of the more valuable things about an agency, right? They can save you from making a multi-thousand dollar shipment mistake, right? They can save you from trying to launch a hot sauce bottle because you thought Amazon would be smart enough to box your 5-pound glass hot sauce bottle, and you pay Amazon to do the prep work, and then they ship it out in padded envelopes. Like, I did that. I made that mistake, right? So then now the next time somebody with glass comes up, I know exactly to tell them, you better box that sucker individually before it gets to Amazon, right? That saved hundreds of thousands of dollars for dozens of brands that I've worked for. So road rash, super valuable and net beneficial to the whole community.
No, I totally agree. Like, you've been saying for a while now, they're like, oh, I'm better at this agency stuff than actually selling myself. And that's totally fine. I'm better at like building data models out of Amazon than I am at accounting for an Amazon business. And trust me, like, I worked my butt off on accounting and getting like our net profit right. And at the end, still didn't even get it right. This is after years of working on it and probably one of my biggest regrets.
Do you want to see who's wasted more on software, you or me? So I made a $2 million investment trying to dev out my own piece of software to take on Helium 10, to take on Asana, Time Doctor, you name it, right? Like, terrible, terrible investment. That's road rash, right? Like, terrible.
I've thrown away a lot of money in software dev. That's probably one of the fastest ways to like, you know, spin up things that just don't ever see the.
I couldn't believe how slow it went. Think about it. The digital marketer in me is like, by the minute, post the social media post. Let's get the YouTube video up. Serve the client. It's like a restaurant, right? Dinner must go on at 5 o'clock. Serve the guests. Oh, by the way, if the cook didn't show up today, hey, waitress, go cook this lobster right now, right? Like, that's what it's like. Dev work is the complete opposite of that. And it was frustrating. I'd go to these calls and I'd be like, nothing is getting done. What the frick is going on? And I gave up and it was just terrible. So
I have heard other stories, people who spend even more money. And I seeing myself when I've got it right, when I've got it wrong, the foundation is pretty important. You know, like, what is the original idea and how is it actually getting implemented technically? Like, that first thing, like, is like a building block.
You did something really well with Smart Scout when you first came out. You solved one problem, right? And then you went to market, right? And so, like, this is why one of the reasons why I came out with a video super early on about Smart Scout is because, like, this is fascinating AF. Like, it would, like, seriously, people would find value in this. And it wasn't like an all bells and whistles type of software out of the get-go. And then you slowly built it up over time. But I think with the dev project, the mistake that I made was I was trying to solve 17 problems at the same time. And I bit off way more than I could chew.
Yeah. You're talking about like, you're always jealous of the business that you don't have. Like here I am in like, my software is something like, I'll just talk about our users. Like they don't need it every minute of every day. They need it. Our users on average log in once a week. And that sucks from like a retention standpoint is we're early on the chopping block if people need to make payroll. Whereas if you are a record keeping software business, if you're an execution type of software business, like your retention is just way better. So I'm always jealous of those businesses. And I'm like, hey, I built an inventory manager for Amazon sellers 12 years ago. Like I just want to resurrect that one.
So here's the thing about our space. It's a high churn industry. My agency has high churn. Your software might have high churn. And I've just had to come to terms with that over the years. I always try and reduce churn and improve retention. But I'm here to tell you that the entire industry, all agencies, almost no exception to this, have high churn. And the only ones that wouldn't have high churn might be enterprise and up.
And high churn is relative. It's just like churn is unavoidable. And generally, people aren't super honest about it. It's kind of close. It's kind of close to what we talked about, like not talking about our skeletons in the closet of selling on Amazon, the skeleton of churn. I've never talked to an agency that's like been like, oh, we're super high churn. You know, like no one volunteers that.
Dude, I'm high churn. 8%. I lose 8% of my customers every month. And yet I'm a $20 million agency and I'm 40% up from last April. How is that possible? Because education model, small and medium business environment, and awesome acquisition model. Right. So like I'm really good at acquiring customers. Now, of that churn, I actually released this publicly, right? The last 100 and some odd customers that left me, 44% of those left me. We had a little dip there. So of the last 100 customers that left me, 44% of them left me because of finances. And I went back and checked on some of these. And I want to tell you, like half of the ones that left for finance, like shelved their brand, like went under within 1 to 2 years. I have some really good, awesome testimonials with videos on my testimonials page with brands that have gone under. Loved my service. We tripled their business. Year or two goes by, they're out of business. Like that is the normal Amazon story for small and medium business. It's just like restaurants. Like every two restaurants that open, one goes under within 2 years. It's crazy.
I didn't know this, but I built a tool that is actually like, it's the entry level category for Amazon sellers. And we're not big at all. You look at our Google traffic and we're like 5% of like the big guys, like Helium 10 and Jungle Scout. And we still get 75 trials a day. So yeah, no, it is. It's happened every day for over 18 months now. And I mean, like we want those numbers to go up, but like when you think about that, like what does that actually mean? That means there are so many people that are like trying to jump in the market, trying to think about it. And we do treat these entry levels differently than the seasoned Amazon sellers. You know, they churn at very different rates. And, you know, some of these new entrepreneurs, they're never going to succeed because they're just not all the way in it.
Got to have clarity, ability, and resolve. You miss one of those three, it's not going to work out.
Well, and how many people start a business with those three in mind?
Probably none of them. Maybe the one of the three, maybe. Like resolve,
yeah,
maybe,
yeah,
but not clarity. And ability is earned, not learned.
No, absolutely. So, well, I think your story is like really interesting. You know, your shift from one business type to another. I had one question follow up on that, and then one that's actually on a different subject. Okay, one, reselling does still has a compliance risk. How do you think about that? Like, you know, do you guys save your invoices? Like, what's the trying to keep it a clean? You can get hit with IP claims.
So I have yet to run into a major one, but I am very familiar with them. I was doing this on a smaller scale 5-6 years ago and very much knew the frustrations of what we've experienced there. I've also had clients who are in this business that have also dealt with this. And so what I would say is yes, have a folder with all the invoices, but overall, if the account health is strong and IP disputes pile in, the worst thing that's ever going to happen is typically to lose a brand, right? And all the listings for that brand. But I hardly ever see an account go down unless it's like five brands simultaneously. Now, if you get hit like that, it's a little bit different. But it's typically some marketer is being told to improve their Amazon direct sales. They go in there and they hire an IP infringement company and they file a bunch of stuff. But resellers, it's totally legal. It's a distribution play, and the ethics are totally legit. Obviously, hijackers, black hat tactics, and people selling wrong items on different listings or all that, total garbage, and I hope they get banned.
Or even stolen goods.
Oh my gosh. Did you see that post from Jed the other day with like it was like a mafia?
Yeah. I think I'm going to get him on the podcast to talk about it soon.
Jeez Louise, I couldn't believe the story there. Insane. So, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in inventory goes missing off a truck and then shows up at a mafia location. He goes to the police. The police won't even go there because they're scared of the mafia. Right? Like, that's crazy. And then they have a reseller on their listing now from the mafia.
Man, I would love to be an undercover journalist of like, if you took the Amazon selling world and just became a journalist, like there are stories for days. And if you think that the mafia doesn't pay attention to like selling on Amazon, like you're wrong, because if someone jumps on a household good that sells millions a year and they're losing 10%, they could be money launderers. You know, that happens. Like it's.
So there are some journalists that focus just on Amazon, Annie Palmer, CNBC. There's others out there. So it is a niche, right? Like people follow it.
There's always stories coming about the Amazon marketplace. Lots of stories every single year. Okay. I've got one, which is close to this compliance issue and close to how you position as an educator and talking about how people can like succeed on Amazon. And I just wanted to pick your brain while I had you on the pod is you like to talk about click-through rate and specifically like in hero image and like little things that you can do to improve the click-through rate. Cause like, you know, Amazon is like it's a game where you're like trying to like figure out how to get people to click on your product. Cause like without your product being considered, you don't have a chance.
What's great about this technique is that anybody can use it. Now, even those without a brand registry, Amazon is now starting to accept image submissions from, and you know, I can't promise it'll go through for you, but we're seeing it more and more. So I call it the CTR main image hack. And essentially you change the main image in a way that makes it more likely to be clicked on by the consumer. Some might call it clickbait. I would say it's more value propositioned to the consumer. So a lot of people are like, oh, terms of service and challenge this and bogus that. And to those naysayers, I would say you haven't tried it yet, first of all. And second, if you have any concern about updating your main image and adding some of the things we'll talk about, adding a keyword, adding an accessory, or adding a color, or changing your box a little bit for the main image, just go on Amazon right now and type in HP printer and scroll down and you'll see listing after listing where they have a piece of pink paper with the printout 3 months of free ink on the paper. Right? So if HP can do that, and Colgate can do that, and every other household name brand is doing it, then so can you. And if you don't, you're going to lose clicks, and it's not going to be beneficial for you. So here are some actionable tips if you want to take advantage of this. Tip number one, add a keyword to your main image. So if I'm selling sage smudge sticks, and I have a commodity product, but then I add the keyword to my packaging that says Sage Smudge Sticks, my click-through rating on Sage Smudge Sticks just went up by 2x. And I've done this and I've proven it. I've also done this with titles. So some of the tips that we give about main images can also apply to titles. So if you just have an exact match in the title, your CTR on that's going to go up. So if it works on a title, it's also going to work on an image very frequently. So you can go to the Search Query Performance Report. And you can look at, and Amazon does a surprisingly good job with this data, where they pre-rank what keywords they think are important for your brand or your ASIN. So they already rank it from top to bottom. So I've done this time and time again. It takes like seconds to look at a Search Query Performance Report and identify what would be the best keyword to add to an ASIN's hero image. So we go in and add that. If that's all you did, you just made more sales. You just ranked your product higher. You improved your CTR. But there's other things you can do. The second tip I would give is to run A/B testing. Now, I'm a big fan of PickFu. There's other partners out there you can test as well. But by just showing the product in a way that's more pleasing to the customer, you're going to improve your click-through rate. Now, this is one that a lot of people will buy into and not have any problems with. But we take A/B testing to a lot more serious of a level, right? So you can test things like showing a golden retriever versus showing a poodle with your pet supplement in the main image and seeing like which one's going to do better for click-through rate. Okay, so showcasing the demographic, the customer avatar, very important for a main image. Tip number three is show everything you possibly can into the main image. Yes, it makes it busy, but everything that we've seen from the data, the CTR, the A/B testing from the PickFu polls, all backs this up. If you show the accessory, if you show the context of the product, if you're selling a supplement and you say it's 60 pills, that's going to do much better than not showing the pills. Also, speaking of supplements, show the damn pills, right? Like show the actual ingredients that go into your product on the main image. And if you go look at negative reviews or even general positive reviews on supplements, same two questions come up over and over. Like, they always want to know the count. They always want to know how big is the pill. And a bunch of old geezers who can't swallow big pills, I don't know, something's there. But like, main images need to showcase all of these details.
That's good stuff. I've listened to and seen you get in those debates on the internet. And no, I totally side with you. I think it's, I love seeing good images, like a good hero image, because it has such an interesting effect. If you ever catch yourself as a shopper and find out what you click on, it's amazing how much trust you put into a good image.
Images are for people and copy is for robots. Once people believe that concept, then they keyword stuff the heck out of the title and the bullet points and the E plus content and so on. Zule Kitchen, by the way, very good brand demonstrating how to do a main image. So if you want to go look up multiple brands, you can look up my brands. I didn't touch Zule Kitchen. I've never worked for them. They're not paying me to say this. They do a really fantastic job, and they would have to if they're the number one home goods item in like 17 categories, for crying out loud. They have bestsellers after bestsellers after bestsellers. Pricing has a lot to do with it. Main image, also a key part of that strategy.
I've mentioned them on the podcast, but it's worth it even like, you know, once a year, just check up and see like if they made any changes. They even do seasonal changes for some of their top stuff. So
yeah, my Tumblr business before it went under, I would add like, you know, little Christmas bells and stuff. And I'm telling you, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, no. And especially as like some of the gifting holidays that happen right about now, with Mother's Day and Father's Day coming. Cool. Well, hey, Stephen, thank you so much for coming on, chatting and just being real for a second. And I think this is definitely going to be an easy, like, listen, you know what I mean? Like there's some podcasts I've done. I'm like, this is a little technical, a little boring, but like, no. When you come on, it's the opposite of that. So
I love the reveals, man. It's always fun to share.
Yeah. Okay. Let's wrap it up there. This was definitely longer than I usually do, but felt a lot shorter. So thanks for imparting some of your wisdom, some of the wisdom that actually takes the scars to show. Okay. Well, with that, that's the pod, and we'll see you guys on the next one.
1, 2, 3.